I live in Israel. This season is dedicated to the memory of the 1,400 of my countrymen who were massacred on October 7th and the 240 people that were kidnapped and are being held hostage by the terrorist organization Hamas. Hopefully they will be returned to their families as soon as possible, and hopefully this terrible war will be able to come to a peaceful end very soon. Welcome to Minute 48 of Season 6 of Movie on Minute, the daily podcast where we take a Capra-esque journey through the 1946 classic, It's a Wonderful Life, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Scott Myers, the screenwriter of K-9 and an associate professor of screenwriting at DePaul University. Welcome back to the show, Scott.
Great to be here. Continue on with this journey into this wonderful movie called It's a Wonderful Life.
Yes. I'm enjoying myself. I hope you have been enjoying yourself this week also.
Oh, yeah. It's great to revisit this. And you really shined a light on several things that I hadn't even thought about. So I appreciate the opportunity to dig into the movie.
Oh, wow. That's great. I'll come and teach your class one day.
I guess.
Yeah, I don't think you want that. All right, so minute 48 begins with Mary being surprised as the door opens again and ends with Mary having an idea. So we ended things yesterday with the two of them getting into a little bit of a spat because the two of them are on completely different tracks as to what they want and need. And George stormed out of there, assumingly going back home. And Mary is on the phone, and she just answered the phone and said hello as yesterday's minute ended. And then she looks over and sees the door opening again. So the look on her face is great. It makes you think, you know, that, you know, we always see these tropes, you know, usually in movies where someone is fantasizing about something, you know, that like someone will burst through the door and maybe lift them up, you know, carry them away or whatever it is. You know, she has this look on her face that, you know, like, why is George coming back so quickly? You know, somewhat surprised.
Oh, yeah.
And
well, I mean,
that's right.
There is that dynamic where we feel like, oh, my God, they're never going to get together. They just split up, big argument. That's it.
You know? That's right. And first of all, don't you think you should have knocked to come back into the house?
I think there, if you listen, because there's talk, but I think there may be a soft knocking, I think, in the audio. I can't quite remember, but
yeah. I didn't hear it in the audio, and it's not in the, you know, it's not in the subtitles. There's nothing that says,
yeah,
you know, and the subtitles, knocking. You know, I have the subtitles that I use are the ones that you can hear the sounds also, you know, closed caption ones. So, yeah. You know, it says telephone ringing, and here it says door opening. But it doesn't say anything about knocking. You know, I mean, maybe because it's a small town idea, you know, that you know people are friendly enough that, you know, you don't necessarily knock every time. I don't know. Or maybe he just thinks to himself, okay, I just left. I'm going right back in.
Yeah, or maybe he's just pissed off. He just wants to get in there, get the hat, and get the hell out of there.
Right.
You know, so
that's true.
So, yeah.
That's very possible. And then he goes, forgot my hat. And then you see the look on her face change, and she has a very wicked look on her face because she basically says to herself, okay, now I'm going to make him even more jealous. I'm going to give him a reason to want to be with me or to stay here anyway.
Because there is that wonderful, this is Capra, his director. A wonderful shot of her on the phone in the foreground and him in the background as he's getting his hat. And mm-hmm. you see both of their, as you go forward in the scene, you see both of their expressions. She's trying to milk this thing, like you were saying, and him responding to it. You see him picking up on it. Yeah.
That's right. I always forget which of his ears doesn't work well. Is it his right? No, it's his right ear. So he's okay. So yeah. So he's looking from his on the left side. So I guess that makes sense that he can hear there.
Yeah.
And then she says in a very campy way. The dialogue here, she does it in a very campy way. And she goes, "Hee-haw! Hello, Sam. How you doing?" So I always find it funny the fact that whenever they're talking to Sam, they always say "Hee-haw."
Yeah.
You know, it gives me the impression that maybe that's like his nickname. You know, as opposed to it just being his catchphrase, I guess. So
yeah, I mean, it is associated with him, absolutely.
Yeah,
that's right. And then we hear over the phone, Sam says, "I'm great. Gee, it's good to hear your voice again." And she responds, "Well, that's awfully sweet of you, Sam." And, you know, if you see her eyes are looking behind her as if to say, okay, I'm really going to make him jealous at this point. And then she says, "There's an old friend of yours here, George Bailey." And then we hear over the phone, you know, Sam says, "You mean old Mossback George?" She goes, "Yes, old Mossback George. Hee-haw, put him on." Now, do you know what Mossback is?
No, I just figured it. I mean, it sounds like, you know, it's not a complimentary, you know, it's like old, right? It's sort of, maybe you looked it up, but it just.
Of course I looked it up. Come on, Scott. You think at this point, you've known me now for 3 days, okay? Or 2.5 days.
Okay.
You think I didn't look it up?
I'll set it up for you.
I won't ask the question. I won't ask the question. I won't ask the question if I don't know the answer.
Well, what in the world does Mossback mean, bro?
All right. So the phrase actually during the Civil War, it was known as Mossy Back, and it meant a person who stayed hidden in order to evade conscription during the Civil War. And I mean, when you look at the word itself. So what it basically talks about, it's that, you know, someone who has old-fashioned views, you know, someone who's very conservative or reactionary, which, again, makes no – I don't see any connection between that and, you know, someone evading conscription. I don't know how I don't know how that really came about that you have it. So, you know, you have these two very, very different connotations for it. But it basically means someone who has old-fashioned views.
Yeah,
which maybe from Sam's perspective, so the, you know, the views of George are basically, you know, I'm always gonna be in Bedford Falls, even though everyone knows he wants to get out, but he just never manages. You know, it's possible that there are people who think that George maybe doesn't have the guts to leave Bedford Falls. What do you think about that aspect of it? Because not everyone knows the reasons. Not everyone knows the reasons he's staying.
Yeah,
you know, we do.
I actually thought there might be. Remember when he sees Harry, or this is early on, where he says, "We need you at school." You know, football player, and as opposed to your broken down. Doesn't he say something like that about George?
They said that at the graduation, at the prom.
Yeah,
or whatever you want to call it. Yeah, he's yeah. Like, well, because Harry was a high school football star. George,
yeah.
You know, George wasn't the sports guy. And we know that because, you know, when he's wearing the football outfit on the way home, it's just humongous on him. You know, he's not built properly for it. No, I know.
Yeah. So maybe then this Mossback thing, the old part of it, like this broken down old whatever, it's sort of a, this is the way that, boy, Sam's not very nice. He's sort of disparaging comments, these backhanded comments to George.
You know, correct. Well, again, from what we know, George, Sam is calling in order to court Mary over the phone. You know, that's the impression that they've given us up until now. So,
up until now, right. Yeah.
So, of course, he's going to, you know, disparage George as much as possible because, you know, he's honing in on what he's trying to do. You know, we'll find out we'll find out very shortly that that's not necessarily true, but that's something else. You know.
Yeah.
And then Mary says, "Wait, I'll call him, George." And then from upstairs we hear her mother say, "He doesn't want to speak to George, you idiot," which goes back that's a great How many mothers will call their daughters idiots when they're talking to the wrong guy, as far as she's concerned, on the phone? I mean, maybe, I guess from a 1946 perspective, it makes sense to for a mother to call her daughter an idiot for wanting to talk to the wrong person on the phone.
Yeah, well, that shows you, I think it speaks to the desperation of the mother. Not maybe not desperation, but that she is really desiring that Mary hook up with Sam, get her, get that money.
Ah, okay.
So that she may blurt out idiot here because it's obvious to the mother that this conversation could potentially lead to them being together, Sam and Mary. And so that may be that. It's also kind of interesting too to think about it when back to when George called her brainless at the
Right.
drugstore when they were kids. So
That's right. So maybe she's used to being called names by people who she looks up to.
yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. Now, I just find it very strange that she calls her an idiot. So.
Maybe they got a rather not contentious, but I mean, he's making violent love to me, mother. You idiot. I mean, maybe they've got this kind of open type of conversation where they're ripping each other or making these kind of ribald comments. I don't know.
Right. Okay, that could be. I mean, you got to think about it that the two of them are basically in the house by themselves. Marty is off wherever he is. We know that there is no Mr. Hatch. So maybe you're right. Maybe they have such a close relationship that they know how to joke around like this that she can say to her mother, "What are you doing?" And, "Oh, I'm making love to him. He's making violent love to me." And then her, maybe oh, you know what? I never thought about that fact that she's that close with her mother. Okay, I can buy that. I can definitely buy that. That Sam actually does want to talk to George. So I don't know if she's defending Sam here, but she's defending the fact that she wants to pass the phone over to George. So yeah.
Yeah, and that little bit of dialogue, because now it hasn't George left at this point?
No, he's still
Because
standing there.
she
He's
doesn't she say
slowly inching.
George?
She's inching towards him. He's
Oh, okay.
sorry, he's inching towards her. As she's talking.
So, oh, okay. See, that from a again from a screenwriting standpoint, that's just a nice little bit of business where she and her mom are engaged in this little sub conversation. And she doesn't realize that George is approaching her because when she turns around, then there's this startle. And so it's just a little bit of business. We call it I call it a bob, that little
Right.
conversation between the mom. So she's turned away and doesn't realize the dramatic irony. We see George is there, but she doesn't until she turns around and you have that little startle moment. So
Right.
again, it's an effective little fun, entertaining. The mom plays her whole role in this thing is kind of like a trickster character to create some humor. I am not. They milk that. They make it more entertaining with this mother character just kind of, providing a kind of a tricky shape-shifting kind of bit of business that she does.
Right, that's true. Okay, so I mean, I George starts walking towards the door, and then he's not on screen, but as soon as she calls for him a second later, he's already back. So he hasn't gone very far. He apparently hasn't closed the door, or maybe he's just right outside on the porch at the point when she screams to him. She goes, "George." Sam wants to
So
speak to you.
that may speak to because again that foreground background shot. If you follow George's reactions when she's going hee-haw, Sam, and that whole thing where she's kind of like you were saying, trying to make George feel jealous, you can see that he's dialed in. It's not like he's just grabbing his hat and running. He's
Right.
paying attention to what that conversation is. So when he leaves, he's still probably caught up with that. Well, should I leave, Sam? And it speaks to the general state of confusion that he's in,
Right.
probably that he doesn't just barge away, that he does kind of hang out on the porch and he's right there and comes back when she calls to him.
Correct. Now, I mean, he leaves, but I think by leaving, he has the look on his face as if she is interested in Sam. So he doesn't really catch on. Again, as we've said all week, he's somewhat clueless about when it comes to relationships and women at this
He's
point.
in, yeah, he's in a an upended state of being. Ever since he found out that Harry married Ruth, and then Harry has this potential job, which means he's not yet again not going to be able to leave Bedford Falls. He's in a an upended emotional state, and as you said, he's confused.
Right, because he doesn't know what to believe. No, that's
He
what it
doesn't know
comes
what he
down to.
wants.
Not just that he doesn't know what he wants; he doesn't know what Mary wants either. And that's causing him problems because he doesn't understand it. He's not able to read the situation. I think that's what it comes down to. And so he starts walking away, and then she pulls him back in, and then he comes back into the frame, and takes the phone and goes, "Hi, Sam." And he goes, "Well, George Bailiofsky, hey, a fine pal you are." And as he's talking, I love how the shot changes, and now we see Sam sitting in an office. And then he goes, "What are you trying to do? Steal my girl?" And I gotta say, until I did research now, I never noticed this before, that he's actually, he has a woman behind him. And he's making eyes at her, and she's basically touching him at the same time. So, in other words, he has no interest in Mary.
No.
So then my biggest question then is why is he calling?
Yeah,
Why
good
has he
question.
promised Mrs. Hatch or Mary that he would call that night? Do they really believe that he's interested or not?
That's a great question. The first thing I would say is that it's visual exposition. We get that the woman there with them, that they are touching, that he's looking up at her. We get that this
Especially
is,
at the moment that he says, "You're trying to steal my
yeah,
girl," and he looks up and smiles at
right. Yeah, exactly. It's like a way of selling that very quickly. So it's very, very smart writing and directing. But you're right. I mean, why does he call? I really have no idea, other than maybe they're just friends, he and Mary, and he just felt like chatting.
No, but he also looks very busy right now. It looks as if he's on his way to a party or something like that, and he's decided to take the few minutes to call Mary.
That's true too, because I was going to say he does bring up this thing which we're going to talk about the plastics and his dad's business, and he does later on, invite Mary and George to, buy some stock. So perhaps that was his motivation. Was he seeking to provide this opportunity to his friends or something? But
Okay, but he
it
didn't know
wouldn't
that
make
George was
sense
going
if
to
he
be
was just
there.
getting ready. No, he didn't know George, but he did ask Mary if she's you got any money. And so
Well, not
maybe
yet.
if you're
I
looking,
mean, that's going to be
no,
later.
not yet.
Right.
No, but
Well,
I'm saying in terms of like back ending and why he called, maybe that was the reason he called, was to make this offer to her. But
Could
it doesn't
be.
make it doesn't make much sense because he's dressed up to go to, out to party down or whatever. But anyhow, I was just trying to think of why
No,
what
no, no.
rationale that may be one of them.
Exactly. No, I understand what you're saying. And if you look at the desk, he has there he's on a phone and he has two other phones next to him. I've always find that funny, that they you see the movies and TV shows sometimes when people have numerous phones on their desk.
They're important.
Yes, that I think that's what they're trying to show here. And you can see through the blinds behind him that he's in New York. And the reason that you can tell that is because you see the name of a hotel that is behind him, the Hotel Piccadilly. Are you by any chance familiar with the
No, but I would guess that you are.
hotel? Well, I'm not familiar with it, the Hotel Piccadilly was built in 1928 and was located on 45th Street, West 45th Street, in New York. And it was a 700-room hotel that was in the heart of the theater district.
That's great.
And it was demolished in 1982. And they built the Marriott Marquis in the place where it was where it stood. But to me, this gives even more insight into what's going on here, because it looks like Sam's about to go out to, see a play.
Yeah, see a play.
So the
Makes
fact
sense.
that he's, that he himself is in the theater district says a lot.
Yes.
Again, this is I don't know if that's on purpose. My assumption is that Capper put that in there on purpose, expecting most people aren't going to catch it. Because
Yeah.
it seems too random that they would say, that you'd be able to see the words Hotel Piccadilly. I mean, you see that through the window on the right-hand side. On the left-hand side, you see you see like an advertisement scrolling, from right to left, and it says genuine Fisher draft ventilation. I have absolutely no idea what that means. I tried looking it up, and I found that there's like a there's an appliance company in New Zealand that was formed in 1928, which I thought maybe that's what it was, but they only started exporting to America in the 60s, so it wasn't that. So anyone out there who, if you know what the generic Fisher draft ventilation is, please let me know.
So I just went to a version of the draft, the script, a version of the script. And when it goes to Sam's office, all it says is medium close shot. Sam is seated at his desk while a couple of his friends are nearby with highballs in their hands. Does not include the girl, does not include any description of what's out the window. So that must have been something they did in production design,
Yeah, could be.
and Capper said we need to put the girl in here in order to make clear that Sam is not really interested in her.
That's right. And I mean, the girl is holding a glass. It's not a highball, but she has some sort of glass there with I believe a cigarette in her hand also at the same time. She's got her fur coat. She definitely looks like she's about to go out on the night
The
in
Sam.
to the theater district.
Yeah, they're about to go to a play. Yeah. But that's not in the script, so it had to have been something that Capra dealt with in production design, just like, yeah.
Okay, that is fair. Do you know who the actor is who plays Sam Wainwright?
No, I never followed up on that. I mean, was he, did he have some noteworthy other roles?
Yes, he has. So his name was Frank Albertson. He was born in 1909 and passed away in 1964 at the age of 55, which is pretty young.
Pretty young, yeah.
He has 196 credits on IMDb, acting
Wow.
credits. He's obviously in this movie, but he is also in Psycho. He plays Tom
Wow.
Cassidy in Psycho.
Cassidy. Tom Cassidy. Trying to remember where that was. That someone at the beginning of the movie where Marion's works or something like that? I don't.
I believe so, but
Yeah.
I
Because
don't
once she
remember.
gets to the motel, I don't. I think once they get to the motel, no. So it's probably has to be up front in the movie, like where he's a coworker or something, or perhaps he's the car salesman. I don't know. Interesting.
He is a wealthy man with an 18-year-old daughter who purchases the Harris Street property as a wedding gift for his daughter. Purchase price was $40,000, and the realtor was Lowry Real Estate. And he ended up paying George Lowry $40,000 in cash.
Okay, that's it. That's where the cash came from.
Yes, right. He was
Okay.
flirting with Marion Crane at the real estate office
Okay.
and was trying to get George to join him to go out drinking. Hey, this is Sam Wainwright.
There he is. Guy likes to go out and drink.
That's right. So yes, and he is the guy who hires Milton Arbogast to track down Marion Crane.
Oh, so he actually has a pretty important role, not only in setting up the cash, but yeah, okay. Wow.
So yeah, I mean, again, he having 200 appearances on IMDb is pretty impressive, especially given the fact that he passed away at the age of 55.
Yeah, no kidding. He's a busy guy.
Yeah, very. Well, a lot of actors at this time, you see that. I mean, we talked a few weeks ago about one of the bit actors who had like a very small part that had like I think 400 roles on IMDb or something like that. Some astronomical numbers that you wouldn't think, that anyone would get near.
Wow, 400 roles.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see where AI goes with that for the background of bit actors.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah.
And then the conversation continues a little bit. George basically says to him, "What do you mean? Nobody's trying to steal anybody's girl. Here's Mary." And he tries to give her the phone back. And then we hear Sam go, "No, wait a minute. I want to talk to both of you. Tell Mary to get on the extension." So first of all, it's very funny to get on the extension. Does that mean that it's a known fact that everyone has numerous phone extensions in their house? Or maybe just
Or maybe it speaks to how close that Sam, I mean, he knows Marty very well, so he's probably been in the house quite a bit, and that may speak again to the fact that, there's this, they have this group of people that are friends, and so it could be that.
And then I love her response here. She goes, "Mother's on the extension."
Again.
And she,
By the way, the line "I am not," that's not in the script.
oh really? Oh wow, that's great that that's that was ad-libbed. "I am not."
That's such a great line. She's such a fun character.
Yes. And I mean, when we see her or earlier in this minute, when she is down comes down the stairs and sees that George is there, she's constantly tugging at her robe. Both above and below. It's just very strange the way that she keeps tugging at her robe with the whole thing. Do you know who plays the mother?
No.
So she was an actress named Sarah Edwards, was born in 1881 and passed away in 1965, and at the age of 83. She had 189. She has 189 credits on IMDb. She was also in the movie The Shop Around the Corner, The Bishop's Wife. So yeah, she had a very prolific career also. I mean,
By the way,
in this movie, she doesn't do very much. But yeah.
No, but she provides some humor.
Yes.
And it does describe her as being in a bathrobe with her hair in curlers in the script. So they had that idea from the get-go,
As the minute is ending, we hear Mary say, "We can both," and then she gets cut off. It's an interesting idea. What's funny, and we'll talk more about this tomorrow, but she doesn't even realize how effective her little suggestion here is going to be.
Yeah, it's pivotal.
Yes.
The scene doesn't work if they're not talking like
Correct.
this, in that proximity.
That's right. And but she has no clue that that's what's going to be happening here.
No, no.
Yeah. All right. So, and that's how this minute ends. Do you have anything else you want to say about this minute?
No, it's great. And also the bit about her mother, just as a reminder, like when I tell my students, there are no unimportant characters. Every character, whether they're a secondary character that appears in multiple scenes, but not all of them, or a tertiary character that only appears in like one scene. You gotta give them something special, some unique something that speaks to their specificity as a character. And the mother's role, she does. You're right, she doesn't have a lot going on in this movie, but in this scene, she does play a comedic role. And she's a busybody. She's a nosy person. She's got an agenda. She wants her daughter to be with Sam, so you give her that much, and then it's great that she sort of pops off the screen when she engages things. So
Very much
good
so.
lesson. Good lesson.
Yes. All right. So every Wednesday we have a segment called "It's a Wonderful Wednesday." The idea behind this segment is that ever since this movie came out 77 years ago, there have been so many different realms of media that have decided to take on the idea of what would happen if something similar to what happens in this movie happens to their characters. You know, it has become a very famous trope. I'm assuming as a screenwriter, you're familiar with the fact that people like reusing or recycling tropes that work, hoping that it's going to work for them too. Oh, yeah. And I must say that so far, of all the ones that I've covered over the last 10 weeks, none of them have come close to being as effective as this movie is. And I probably, my assumption is that I'm not going to find something that will be more effective or that even comes close to being as effective as they are here, of using the idea of what, you know, when a character finds out what life would be like without them, or, you know, sometimes I'm touching upon the theme of alternate universes and stuff like that. You know, like if they would have gone right instead of left, what would have happened? Things like that. So this week I actually decided to go into a form of media that I am very unfamiliar with. And I just came across it, and it's actually radio. So on February 2nd, 1947, so we're talking not very long after this movie came out. I mean, the movie debuted in December, but it only was, I think, in full release January 1947. It was December 46 and January 47. So we're talking only a month after it came out. So we have the Jack Benny program. So Jack Benny had a radio program that was, I guess, airing once a week. And so the plot of this episode, and I actually was able to find it online and listen to this 30-minute episode, where you know, Jack goes to see the movie It's a Wonderful Life, and as he's walking home with I guess his girlfriend, he basically talks about the fact of how improbable this type of idea is, that it's something that couldn't work or anything like that. And then he bumps into Frank Capra, and he has a little bit of a conversation with Frank Capra, which I find really funny. That's something, it's something they only could do back then. I don't think you would find that much here nowadays, that, you know, that just walking down the street, you're going to bump into, you know, a filmmaker or something like that. You know, then a little bit later, you know, he's in his apartment, and he has to go get something from the cabinet. And as he's doing that, he bumps his head. And when he wakes up, there is a he has a guardian angel next to him that tells him what, you know, that the movie's premise is probable. And now I'm going to show you what your life would, what the lives of people around you would be if you didn't exist. So again, they go through the various characters of this radio show. I'm not familiar enough with the show to know who all of the characters are. I mean, even after listening to it. So you have a character named Don Wilson who has become a farmer, and another character, Phil Harris, you know, is I think a comedian, and he's starting to play at all these really bad venues. And then another one of the characters, Dennis Day, has gotten a job working for someone else named Fred Allen, who was, I believe, another comedian at the time. One of the other, and the woman that he's walking with, Mary Livingston, who went to the movie with him, she marries another one of the characters named Frank Nelson. So he finds out that you know, that basically everyone moved on with their lives without him, and that somewhat he's insignificant. And then he wakes up from the stream, and, you know, everything is back to normal. So it's just, again, it's a nice way to look at this, but, you know, I don't think it even comes close to being as effective now as the movie itself is. It's possible, you know, back in the day it made more sense. You know, are you familiar at all with radio programs?
Well, I'm familiar with the Jack Benny show, but I remember it from when I was super young, from TV, and several of those characters that you're talking about, there were people on the TV show.
Okay. It makes sense.
But I don't remember the radio aspect, but I do remember that he did have a successful TV
yeah.
show.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm not saying that the show isn't successful. What I was saying is the idea of this trope
Oh yeah.
doesn't
I heard
feel
it,
that it
yeah.
works very well.
No.
But I was very
Yeah,
happy to check out this new medium, you know.
Yeah, radio was
Yes.
huge back
I
in
mean
the
I
day,
like the fact that you know, I obviously when you're watching movies, everything is very visual and stuff like that, but I like the fact that they were able to make the radio programs very audio, I guess you can say. That, you know, there are a lot of things that are going on that you can hear are going on.
You know, I may be wrong, but I seem to remember that they did a radio production of It's a Wonderful Life like 15 or 20 years ago. I could be wrong on that, but I think they did a version of it. It might be worth looking that
Okay.
up. Yeah.
Okay. That makes sense. All right. So, Scott, you want to once again tell people where they can find you?
Go into the story as my blog. It's the official screenwriting blog of The Blacklist, which is the most important screenwriting brand in Hollywood, if you will. And so that's someplace you can go, just tons of information for writing and screenwriting. I have a book out called The Protagonist's Journey, an introduction to character-driven screenwriting and storytelling. It's published by Palgrave Macmillan, which is a London-based company that's been in existence since the 1850s. And it's done quite well. It's number one bestseller in film and television and Amazon. So yeah, those are two points of reference there that I'd like to
All
promote.
right, great. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Move Around Minute. You can find me on my website, movearoundminute.com. You can find me on Facebook, and you can find me on Twitter. So until tomorrow, hot dog.
Hot dog.
I love you truly, truly dear. Life with its sorrow, life with its tears.